The following is a production of BYU Broadcasting in cooperation with the Brigham Young University Division of Continuing Education.
Today's interview on Thinking Aloud is being taped for delayed broadcast. Right now, as I speak, millions of Americans are casting votes in the national election, charting a course for our collective future. I mention this only because of a piece that appeared today, Election Day 2008, in the New York Times, written by columnist Bob Herbert. As Herbert enumerates the multiple crises confronting not just the soon-to-be president-elect and new Congress, but also the citizenry of the United States, he quickly rattles off the predictable litany: the credit fiasco in the financial sector, impending unemployment lines, the widening gap between rich and poor. Almost surprisingly, he omits the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. Yet, for all the woes Herbert tallies off, I found none quite so extraordinary as the following item, to which he devoted more words than to any other single crisis. I quote, "The U.S. is a country in which blissful ignorance is celebrated, and intellectual excellence, the key to 21st century advancement, is not just given short shrift, but is ridiculed. Paris Hilton and Britney Spears are cultural icons. The average American watches television a mind-numbing 4.5 hours a day. At the same time, our public school system is plagued with some of the highest dropout rates in the industrialized world. Math and science? Forget about it. Too tough for these TV watchers, or too boring, or whatever." Herbert then cites Bill Gates, who says, "When I compare our high schools with what I see when I'm traveling abroad, I am terrified for our workforce of tomorrow." Just imagine, on this historic election day, of all the mighty problems our nation faces, a voice from the New York Times clamors most urgently not recruit more troops, not bail out bankers, and not spread the wealth. Instead, he zeroes in, as the climax of his argument, on education. And of all the disciplines in which we Americans have become horrifically undisciplined, he points to math and science. Hello, I'm Marcus Smith, thinking aloud today about some fascinating connections between our current national crises, the success of Walmart, how the Allies defeated Hitler in World War II, the modern internet, schools in China. Hold on, you say. You'll never be able to connect the dots. Well, listen to us try on today's Thinking Aloud. It's my great pleasure to introduce our guest on today's Thinking Aloud, Jeffrey Humphreys, who is an assistant professor in the Department of Mathematics at Brigham Young University. And he has published research in journals such as Communications in Mathematical Physics, Physica D, Numerische Mathematik, the Journal of Hyperbolic Differential Equations, to name just a few. In relation to mathematical research, Humphreys has received several grants from the National Science Foundation, where he served as a panelist. He has consulted for Baden, Gage, and Schroeder, for General Motors Corporation, and the Park City Group. His PhD in mathematics is from Indiana University. Jeff Humphreys, welcome to Thinking Aloud.
Thanks for having me.
I think what I'd like to do today is basically three things. First, I would like you to describe for us what is the risk of not having a younger generation schooled in math, particularly, or mathematics and science. And after we talk about the risk, maybe you can talk about what is the real problem with recruitment? Why is it that culturally American attitudes are such that recruiting people to these disciplines is a problem? And yet, for once you've talked about risk and recruitment, I really think the bulk of our conversation is going to be about a very interesting application of mathematics that should entice people to become mathematicians in an area called operations research. So let's begin with what are we facing if we don't bone up on math?
Well, so, any advance in technology is going to be, founded from basic research in science and in engineering. And mathematics, as Richard Feynman says, is the language of science, and how we quantify things and how we generalize and put things together conceptually will be based on mathematics. And so the risks involved if we don't have a good mathematical foundation is that we can't talk about science, we can't talk about technology, and ultimately we can't innovate. That is the key to our economy continuing to grow and evolve. I mean, look at what's happened in the last 20, 30 years, primarily from the Cold War era, all the research then and development that went on in the Cold War has moved over into the business sector. It's given us the internet. That was a DARPA project. It's given us wireless technology, satellite technology, all the communications that we enjoy and have become a part of our daily life is all based on R&D you know, there's a lot of mathematics in that. There's a lot of science in that. And if we can't continue to do that, then we're going to get dominated by a hungry, eager people in Asia and Europe who want a piece of the American dream.
I've read a number of studies with your assistance. You've pointed me in the direction of some of these studies from think tanks, from public agencies, from the commercial sector. All of these various articles, they're sounding the alarm. And they do point out, and here's just a quote from one of these studies, today's global language for economic competitiveness is math and science. Mathematics is the bedrock for any of these activities that have to do with technological advancement in the commercial sector?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every engineer here at Brigham Young University or at any major university is going to take 6 or 7 semesters of pretty significant mathematics, starting with calculus and moving on. That is necessary for them to even have the slightest degree of literacy in their own subject.
And I'm not going to lean on you to ask you to make the argument for how it is that not being economically competitive in the global arena is going to have detrimental effects on standard of living and quality of life and all of those things. I'll set you free on that one.
Okay.
You get a buy on that. Let's talk about recruitment. Why do Americans sort of shy away from math?
Well, math is hard. I mean, there's no question. It is a challenge. It's difficult, and parents, you know, they forgot a lot of their math, and so they actually excuse their children when their children struggle with math. They're like, yeah, I was never good at that either. There was this study that came out recently that, you know, it was entitled "Math is Important, but Not for Me," and that's just an attitude that's really pervasive in our culture and in our country. Whereas in developing nations and you know, in China and India and Singapore and in several countries in Europe, it's viewed as sort of an intellectual achievement to be good at math and something that is important in the homes. People, you know, in these other countries, you know, really strive to do well in mathematics, and the parents don't give the kids a pass, as you just gave me one, succeeding and excelling in mathematics. Our country, you know, despite our you know, dominance economically currently is at the bottom of the industrialized nations in terms of high school math and science exams. And you know, Utah, if you adjust for demographics, is also at the bottom of the 50. I mean, not the bottom, but it's in the bottom tier. It's a scary thought to think what's going to happen when in 20 years China has a better fighter jet than we do. They have a better navy than we do. You know, they have better communications, and the products that emerge out of you know, the tech sector or the medical sector start coming from these other countries rather than, you know, where they've been predominantly coming out of the U.S. and Europe. And so as that changes, as these economies emerge, we're really threatened with with problems. And what we do today is going to take 20 years for it to achieve its full effect. I mean, you know, take children in kindergarten. It's going to take 20 years to turn those kids into scientists. If we don't do something now, I really am fearful for the next generation.
So in your own personal life, did you see yourself as an anomaly in society when you were in high school because you liked math and most people didn't?
Oh, that's a great question. Actually, no. I mean, I was good at math. I was really bad at reading. I was in special ed for 4 years, third through sixth grades, because I was dyslexic, and it was really the only subject I excelled in. But I wasn't a freak of nature. I was just, you know, in the top tier of my class in math and really bad at everything else, and so it seemed to be a natural fit for me. It was either that or the Marines, because I really did want to be a soldier. But that was one thing I was good at, and so it's something I pursued. But it was important in my family. I mean, I had an older brother who was always in the high math, and it that kept me, thinking that I had to at least be good at this one subject. Mm-hmm. But success in math. I mean, there's a myth that people think it has something to do with DNA or you know, you're either born with it or without it, and honestly, it has more to do with how hard you're willing to work and and just how willing you're, you know, how hard you're willing to push yourself when you are struggling.
And good instruction.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, I can point to, you know, Mrs. Farner in the 10th grade as being instrumental in me making that transformation from Marine to mathematician, you know, as far as what I was thinking for the future for me. But, you know, and everybody who hates math, they can always point to some teacher that made it miserable for them or that didn't sympathize with them or that, you know, that made them hate it. And you know, we've got to raise the bar at all levels. I mean, parents need to become much more focused on math and science, and we need to raise the bar amongst our educators as well, so that they, you know, push it and it becomes a society priority.
One last question about recruitment and the cultural attitudes towards mathematics as a course of study. Is there a sense that you have that we need to move up the timetable for which types of maths are learned at which stages in life? For instance, when I was going to high school in the late 70s, we hit calculus by our senior year. Is there a sense that maybe algebra can be taught earlier or that calculus can be hit a little sooner? Is that kind of competitive way of teaching mathematics a big issue for you?
Well, you know, I would be happy if it stayed the same in the sense that it's actually getting worse. It's going in the other direction. People are coming to college less well-prepared than they were 3-4 years ago. I'll have a very simple problem on a board that's just very trivial arithmetic, and I hear the backpacks unzipping because people are pulling out their calculators. If they were just as good as they were 3 years ago, I'd be happy. Mm-hmm. And I'm speaking, you know, generally, but you know, there's certainly a lot of brilliant kids out there. But that's a problem we're seeing. Is I think we've actually gone in the wrong direction in terms of dumbing down the curriculum in the secondary education.
Even with the big push that we've been hearing about from the government for probably a decade now about math and science, even with the more public attention, we are not making the inroads we need to make at this point.
I don't know how effective it's been. It might take a while to find out, but I'm not seeing it in the classrooms at all.
Operations research, this is a particular specialty of yours. Talk to us about why this would seem relevant to the high school student who might be tempted to move from Marines to math.
Sure. Yeah. So the operations research is it sort of has two sort of taglines. One is it's called the science of better, and another one is the most important science you've never heard of. It has a great history. I mean, it I guess was called logistics before World War II, it's something that, you know, has been important in military strategy for millennia. But it really emerged out of World War II as a crucial piece to our success, particularly in the Atlantic. It is an example. I mean, something you don't hear about so much in the history books about World War II is the Battle of the Atlantic. I mean, the whole point from 39 to 45 is we've got to get a bunch of stuff from this country, you know, a huge manufacturing base, over to Europe in order to use it to fight. You know, we're talking tanks, we're talking supplies of all sort, medical supplies, and you know, bullets and bombs and
you
airplanes.
You have to move an entire war machine across the ocean.
Absolutely. And so we Rosie the Riveter, you know, comes out and we convert our manufacturing base into a military base, and we're making this transformation and trying to get, you know, the war important in the households because the people were pretty against it early on. And prior to Pearl Harbor, and the tonnage war was merchant sailors bringing, you know, billions of tons of supplies over to England. And if England's supply lines got cut off, I mean, they're an island. If their supply lines get cut off, they fall, and you know, the Nazis win Europe. The U.S. and Canada was bringing over great deals of supplies, and then the Germans started sinking these ships. You know, I mean, thousands of ships were sunk, and tens of thousands of merchant sailors died. The U-boat, the whole purpose of the U-boat was to sink, not destroyers, but to sink, you know, commercial boats.
The supply chain.
The whole point being, if you can sink the boats are a lot better if they're sunk. They can't transport any goods, and it's hard to build boats. It takes time. And so if they can sink them faster than we can build them, they'll win the war. They'll stop us from being effective in the Atlantic.
So logistical problems of transporting goods, materials, war materials, that history of logistics somehow correlates with the big box stores of today, whether you're a Costco or a Walmart.
Oh, absolutely. So yeah, I mean, business is war, right? you've got competitors. You're trying to dominate. You're trying to survive, and you've got to get your stuff, you know, from your suppliers onto your shelves and out the door into somebody's car, at a faster pace than the competitors. So you've got to entice people to come to your to your store over others, and businesses, what do? I mean, they grow armies. They have a hierarchical structure. They plunder. It's called mergers and acquisitions. And they go to battle. They have intelligence, they want to use any tool they can to their advantage. And operations research is about optimization. It's about making your system more efficient. Walmart has just dominated in this area. That's why they're the number one company in the world in terms of revenues, in terms of employees. They are huge. And they've done it. I mean, you know, lots of parts to their strategy, but a crucial piece is how well they've done with supply chain management operations research.
So operations research is a discipline applied primarily to supply chain management?
Yeah, and military logistics.
Okay.
The Naval Academy, for example, is going to have a significant place in the field of operations research because, you know, they've got a, I mean, that's what the Pentagon does. I mean, that's what, you know, it takes to run a military is you've got to feed the troops. I mean, you know, the D-Day invasion, we landed 150,000 troops. Imagine doing that in a weekend. That's not easy.
Imagine doing that in a world where all the information was typed out in triplicate with typewriters.
Absolutely.
Without an internet.
Extremely inefficient compared to what we have today. But at the same time, I mean, it is, you have to do it better than your opponent or else you lose. I mean, it's if your supply line gets cut off, it's over.
We've been talking a little bit about business, a little bit about war, basically talking about calculating people, mathematicians. On Thinking Aloud today, our guest is Jeff Humphreys of the Department of Mathematics at BYU. And operations research is a particular application of mathematics that can have a tremendous impact on the economy, on individual businesses, as well as countries, as you've mentioned, with national security issues. I'd like you to chat to us a little bit about something you told me earlier, a couple days back, that once you worked at, was it Shopko?
Yeah, when I was a teenager, I worked at Shopko and had a good experience. When you look at the Shopko and some of these other department stores, and you compare it with what Walmart has, you'll see some differences. Walmart, most of, if not all of their inventory is on the shelves. You know, they don't have a huge shipping, receiving, or inventory storage facility in the back of their store, whereas, you know, when I worked at Shopko, I mean, half of the store was on the other side of the pegboard that the customer never saw. And that might be a slight exaggeration, but that's the point. Is, I mean, they just had pallets after pallets after pallets of stuff, so that when, you know, they run low on toasters, they go in the back room and they bring in the toasters. The difference is with today's sort of modern technology, and Walmart is a protagonist in this area, is when you buy a toaster, one's put on the truck the next morning or that night and is on its way to replenish the shelves. So rather than having all of this extra storage in the back, They use their distribution centers very effectively to do what's called just-in-time inventory. Now, people are copying Walmart, and I'm sure that other people have innovated well in this area, and everybody's sort of doing it now because it was so effective. I mean, in fact, I happen to know that General Motors is also, was a very big sponsor of that, the idea of just-in-time inventory, so that, you know, they don't have to pay interest on all of the stuff that they've purchased that's sitting in these, you know, the back inventory. They want it delivered right when they need it, much like in surgery, you know, when the surgeon says scalpel and then a scalpel magically appears in his hand. You want to have the same thing with you know, toaster, Sony TV, you know, computer, and you want those things to appear just in time so that you don't have to pay all this money to manage and hold an inventory.
Why would the discipline of mathematics somehow support the success of an organization such as a Walmart in making these processes more effective, more efficient?
Absolutely. Well, mathematics does two things. It's about complexity and understanding the complexity of systems, dissecting that, and that's true. And you know, you had a speaker a few months ago, John Dallin, talked about wound healing in using mathematics to study wound healing. It's a very complex process, and mathematics helps you to break that down and make sense of it. You know, much like we break down atoms into protons, neutrons, and electrons, you break down any complex system into its pieces and understand the structure of those pieces. Mathematics also is important with the flow of information. What things are communicated as a system evolves? What are the signals that get sent out, and how do you make the best of that information? Particularly in the presence of uncertainty. What do you do when you're not exactly sure what's going to happen, and how do you make the best decisions dealing with these probabilities? That's what mathematics does well, and that's why so many fields require it, is because they need to understand that language in order to have the conversation and quantify it.
So do you suppose that the success in operations, delivery, supply chain, all of this, for an outfit, and we've been using Walmart just as an example. I'm going to stick with it.
Yeah.
The success of a Walmart has to do in part with business strategists who very conscientiously went out and targeted a pool of potential employees who had the adequate math skills to execute the operations research needed to streamline their company. Or is it more a matter of people who are good at math then move into, say, business management in a graduate level, or and then move from, not directly from the discipline of mathematics to Walmart, but there are intervening places that are maybe interdisciplinary?
I think it's a combination of both. I mean, some people will get a whiff of what math can do, and then they'll seek out people who can do it, and then some of them will get that personal exposure, and then they'll say, "Well, how can I apply this?" I mean, it's certainly both. I mean, there's very successful people in operations research that are actually in business schools, and their undergraduate degree is in math, and then they go and get a PhD in OR or operations research from an operations research department, but they've got that foundation, and then they're able to leverage their mathematics and also computer science and statistics come into play very significantly in this field, but they leverage those ideas into the field. Absolutely.
Yeah. Aside from the mental euphoria of solving a problem, what is the appeal for somebody who works in the area of operations research? Surely we've all had, and I'm not being facetious at all, there's some satisfaction that we derive from approaching a problem and solving it. There's certainly the incentive of a well-paying job, but can you describe for me maybe the mindset of the person who would be drawn into this career, not knowing that the operations research even existed, but it's just the right place for this person to be down the road?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. So, of course, problem solving is you get that eureka moment, nothing's better than that. That's the sweet spot. At the same time, people say, okay, well, I want a career where, I really enjoy doing math. I really enjoy using computers and doing statistics. What can I do? I think they get the killer instinct that you get in the business school or any other environment where you're competitive, and you get to leverage your brain to compete. I think it's no different than a chess player or any other kind of intellectual pursuit where it is a competition.
And so the recruitment is still a problem, even though there is this built-in appeal of mathematics for people who enjoy problem solving and competitiveness.
I think so.
Yeah. How many of your students, and maybe you can't speak for your department, and you don't have to give us hard, fast numbers, of course, but give us a sense for how many of your students take the bait and move towards operations research?
Oh, there's certainly a significant number, and send them off to you know, to operations research graduate programs typically. One thing that's actually interesting about operations research, I mean, we've made that the focus of the show, but it is not terribly different than financial mathematics and the actuarial sciences. Mathematically, they're kind of the same problem. For example, in operations research, you have an inventory of goods. On Wall Street, you have a portfolio. And in an insurance company, you have also a portfolio of policies. You're trying to buy low, sell high. You're trying to make good decisions on uncertainty. And so when we talk to our students, we actually talk about all three in sort of a, you know, you decide later what you want to be, but here's the core that will help you to pick which one. And many of them go off to actuarial sciences. It's a very nice job. It pays very well. And it's 9 to 5. Some people want the Wall Street. They want the killer, you know, go to Manhattan or Chicago and you
fewer
know,
and fewer people by the way are interested.
Well, of course.
In that.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe, but you know, there's sort of a killer instinct that goes with being in the action on Wall Street, and other people, you know, they want to pick a certain location and live and you know, airlines and retailers of all sorts, and the government has a very significant workforce in operations research.
In a couple of minutes remaining for us, I just want to go back to the idea of how our American capacity with mathematics, or the lack thereof, situates us vis-a-vis the global situation. You said something fascinating to me the other day. It doesn't take even a mathematician to realize, as you said, that there are more honor students graduating in China than we even have students in the United States.
Yeah, it's absolutely scary. And you know, the ones, you know, that come here for, I mean, we have in our country lots of students that come from China to do graduate programs because we've got still the strongest education opportunities in the world at the college level. They come to our country and it's just amazing how hard they work. They've got the, you know, the immigrant attitude, the pioneer work ethic, whatever you want to call it. You know, I used to be at Ohio State University and I had a Chinese student that knocked on my door, and when I opened it, he was crying and just completely dishonored. He bowed and he couldn't figure out how to do his homework problem. And it was just personally devastating to him, and he had dishonored his entire family because he couldn't figure out his homework problem. Mm. Where I have, you know, domestic students who will show up to office hours because other people are there, and they just want to see if they can sort of get a free answer without having to actually sit down and really think about it. They're trying to say, okay, what are people asking, and how can I use that? And they're writing stuff down, but they didn't really come armed with a question. They hadn't even really looked at their assignment yet, and that attitude difference is so stark and, I think, terrifying, because we don't have, you know, in large part, that kind of an attitude when it comes to taking responsibility for our own education and really mastering topics. Yeah. So I think it's scary, and the households need to change. Moms and dads need to sit their kids down and say, math is important, and you're going to do well at it.
One last quick question, and only partially in jest.
Okay.
Do you optimize things in your own home and household? Are you applying operations research to your life apart from your career?
At some level, yeah, and it probably drives my wife crazy.
Just had to ask. Jeff Humphries, great pleasure having you today on Thinking Loud. Thanks for joining with us.
Thank you for having me.
Jeffrey Humphries of the Department of Mathematics at Brigham Young University, and we've been talking about the risks of an undereducated public, American public, in math and science, and math in particular. We've been talking about recruitment issues and about a particular application of mathematics called operations research. We hope you have a chance to listen to this program again or any of our past interviews on Thinking Aloud. Just come to our website, classical89.org/thinkingaloud. You can have it there on demand. We have podcasts. Don't forget, we're on the air every weekday at 11 o'clock, except for on Tuesdays when we bring you a BYU devotional or forum broadcast. Repeat broadcasts evenings at 8. I'm Marcus Smith. Thanks for joining with us.
Thinking Aloud is a production of BYU Broadcasting, made possible in cooperation with the Brigham Young University Division of Continuing Education.